Welcome to the Long-Term Investing Podcast with Baskin Wealth Management. I'm Barry Schwartz, President and Chief Investment Officer. In this podcast, we ignore all the noise and have conversations about the things that matter in today's markets. It's what we talk about with each other here in the office, and we want to share those conversations with you. Please stay tuned for our legal disclaimer at the end of the episode. Welcome back to the podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. We got a great show today. We're going to cover TFI International's stunning recovery. We're going to cover share buybacks of companies who know how to allocate capital, especially when their stocks fall. We'll cover as well the retirement of Tim Cook from CEO. What a year it's been, or the past, I guess, 2 years of so many of these great world-class CEOs, people running money over the years or stepping down, moving in the executive chairman roles, and we'll describe and talk about the career of Tim Cook for a bit. But before we get into that, let's get into this. If you like this podcast, please subscribe to us on YouTube, on Apple, and on Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Our podcast is growing, so thank you very much, everybody, for listening and providing your comments, your feedback. We really appreciate your five-star reviews. Please subscribe. Please do whatever you can. Tell everybody about our podcast if you like investing. We love to see those numbers grow, and we appreciate all your support. For those who are interested in Baskin Wealth Management, investment management services, of course, we'd love to have you as a client. Please take a look at our website. It's a treasure trove of information, a lot of videos, a lot of links to podcasts, and as well as our long-term results are on the website. Baskin Wealth Management, we respect our clients' money very, very much. We try to invest our clients in the way that we would invest for ourselves. Diversify, treat every dollar that a client has as a hard-earned dollar and not fool around with it. And if you want to have a fresh conversation about portfolio management, especially in a world that is so dynamic and so uncertain, we're your guys. So with that, let's talk about Tim Cook. And also, you mentioned, what's his name from Netflix? Reed Hastings.
Yep.
So I mean I can't even keep track in my brain. I didn't write down all the all-stars that have retired over the last few years, but we can start with Warren Buffett, Mark Leonard, John Malone at Liberty, right? Yep. And then of course Tim Cook. For those that don't know, of course Tim Cook was the CEO or will be the CEO of Apple until September.
Yes.
And replacing him is a gentleman called John Ternus. John is the running the hardware division
at
Apple. Well, that's a smart choice because the hardware division is what makes all the profits, the iPhones, the Macs, the iPads, and of course, the AirPods. So Tim Cook took over in 2011 after the passing of Steve Jobs. You know, at the time, everybody said this is a company that's not going to innovate anymore. Tim Cook is a supply guy, he's operational, he doesn't have the innovations, he doesn't know anything about hardware. Lo and behold, here we are, 15 years later, and I think he's created, next to Jensen at NVIDIA, the most shareholder value of all time. Am I correct on that?
Yeah, that's right. If you look at the market value increase from the time that he started till what Apple is today,
yeah,
I think it's something about like $2.5-3 trillion Whew. Of value created.
Wow.
Which would be second all time in terms of the most value, market mm-hmm. value ever created.
So we're pleased to say that.
And most for a non-founder.
Most for a non-founder. Well, we're pleased to say and toot our own horn here that we've owned Apple shares for ourselves and for clients since 2012. You may not have been born in 2012, but that's the case for Baskin's relationship with Apple, and we respect Tim Cook. Really, Tim Cook was the architect of the China relationship, right? Without Tim Cook, he's done an amazing job opening up relations for U.S. companies, for the U.S. government with China, creating that amazing supply chain, from just an idea of Steve Jobs turning the iPod into a phone. And now billions of people use Apple products every single day, and they continue to add more products and services. Just an amazing business. Tim Cook is not leaving the building, correct?
So he will stay on as executive chair and assist with regulatory and government communication type things. Mm. So, which makes a lot of sense because he personally has a relationship with Donald Trump. he personally knows a lot of officials in China. Mm-hmm. And so I think these are not things that you can expect his successor to be able to replicate, at least in the short term.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe we got lucky. We got the right jockey on the racehorse, so to speak, with Tim Cook, but he created enormous value. So exciting, being a non-founder, of course. And he's now going to enjoy the fruits, bad pun, of his labor. He's a billionaire as well as a result of, you know, owning Apple stock and all of his incentives and compensation.
Yeah, I think the key accomplishment of Tim Cook, if you look at the way Apple has changed as a company throughout his tenure, is that I think in 2011, it was still largely a hardware company that sells phones and Macs and devices. Yeah. What Tim Cook really did beyond the supply chain initiatives is really grow the service portion of Apple. Mm-hmm. So this includes the App Store. This includes Apple Music, yeah. Apple like the Apple TV, and various devices that kind of connect with the ecosystem around the iPhone.
That's right.
So the AirPods, the Watch, those were all under Tim Cook.
Beautiful. So he really, I guess, leveraged the distribution that Apple had, the fact that the consumers and businesses love their products, and said, hey, we could start selling ancillary products, ancillary services, and really be the de facto communications tool for businesses and consumers. And, you know, even though Apple is so big, there's still so much more white space that it can achieve, whether it's in subscriptions for music or television or movies or entertainment or games, even getting more subscribers for its phones and God knows what other products it will come up with, right? Yep. It continues to innovate. I read the other day that the AirPod is now becoming like a hearing aid device, right? And so who wouldn't want to have, you know, a much cheap hearing aids, by the way, are a fortune.
Right.
And some people complain they don't work very well, right? So there's just so many opportunities, whether it's health, financial services, payments, that Apple can continue to dominate and grow going forward. And we're excited to see what John Ternus brings. Any color you can add on the new CEO?
Yeah, so he's been with Apple since 2001. Mm-hmm. So he's been there for a long time, clearly understands the way that Apple likes to think and like to operate about things.
Yeah,
I think he... one of his key accomplishments was leading the shift of Macs from Intel-based to ARM-based.
Okay.
So going from external third-party chips to internal Apple silicon, mm-hmm. which really drove the performance improvements and the differentiation of Apple as you see it today.
Fantastic.
And he's responsible for a lot of the, you know, like a lot of the innovations that you like, the smaller innovations that you might have observed in mm-hmm. the like for example, he's working on the foldable iPhone, right?
Okay.
So has it really increasing his responsibilities at Apple throughout his tenure, and by all accounts, I think it was I think people are generally happy with the selection of him as the next CEO, particularly because of his hardware background, which indicates that Apple is likely to focus on hardware as the differentiation for its business rather than software.
I think a big assist to Tim Cook goes to, of course, Warren Buffett for his guidance to Tim Cook and the Apple financial team, saying, you're generating all this cash. Start buying back stock, right? And over the last number of years, since Apple really been aggressive on the buyback, I mean, it's worked wonders for the stock. Not only is there many fewer shares outstanding, but the balance sheet is still in terrific shape. And, you know, it's I like the fact that management was open to listen to the words of Warren Buffett. It's, you know, a lot of tech companies do a lot of different things, but Apple, you know, following with the enormous buybacks for many, many years, really focusing on shareholder returns and not blowing their brains out on these mystery bets that may or may not work.
Especially in AI.
So, and also to add to that, Reed Hastings, of course, similar. Is he moving to a...
So he was the chairman mm-hmm. of Netflix.
Yeah.
So Reed Hastings, for those who are not familiar, he was the guy who made Netflix the streaming powerhouse.
Yeah.
He turned it from a DVD rental company to what Netflix is today. He stepped down, I think, in 21 or 22 as CEO, became the chairman, but announced that he will be stepping down from that as well.
Do you think that that was coordinated with the announcement that they're not going to win Warner Brothers? So there's...
I don't think so. Yeah. I think that was one... So his stepping down from the board, I think, was one reason why the stock fell on its earnings.
Yeah.
Because he, you know, he was the company founder.
He's the founder,
and
yeah.
Now he's not going to be involved at all in the business. So
unlike a Warren Buffett who's still showing up to work every day, or a Tim Cook who, you know, may come in a number of times a week, Reed Hastings is going to focus on philanthropy and his other interests.
Yeah, so I think that it's not really said explicitly why he's not going to be on the board anymore. But I think if you kind of look at, read between the lines, Netflix over the past couple of years has gotten into trouble before over comments that board members have made about various things. So during the last presidential election in the US, Reed Hastings was a big Harris supporter, for instance. He had donated money to her campaign. I think there were some people on the internet who dug around and found that out. And then they said they tried to start a campaign to cancel Netflix.
Yeah.
Right. And then while Netflix was pursuing Warner Brothers Discovery, another board member, Susan Rice, had again made some comments publicly that Trump wasn't very happy about.
Yeah.
Right. So I think that it is, being on the board of Netflix is really a position that, you know, you have to kind of watch what you're saying and do. And I think Reed Hastings, like, he's a rich guy at this stage. He wants to, he has his causes that he feels strongly about. And I think he wants to go and pursue those.
And they may not align with what...
They at a minimum, they may cause certain portions of Netflix's viewership base to be upset.
Sounds good.
So that I think that's really the reason why he is doing this at this time. It's not because he doesn't think Netflix is going to do well or not.
I guess it just goes to show how old we are and how long we've been in this business when all these world-class founders are retiring well before you. But, you know, lo and behold, things change. Things are dynamic. There'll be new great founders and new operators. And, you know, as long as the companies that we own have strong management with, a nice approach on capital allocation, we're gonna stay the course. You know, obviously we love to invest with founders, but it's not realistic to expect people to live forever or run companies forever. And, you know, it's an exhausting job. I totally get it to be CEO of a huge publicly traded multi-$100 billion company, and especially if you've already achieved all the success you have financially, it's hard to have the motivation to continue to show up to work. Not like us, of course. We're very excited to continue to come to work every single day.
I think it's important because in both of these situations, there was somebody that internally understands the culture intimately that was able to step up and be the successor. Yeah. And that's what you want to see, where...
It's not like they did an executive search and found some... new CEO outside, right? These are companies that have been training these people who have high positions at those companies for many, many years. Turnus, you said 2001. Ted Sarandos at Netflix, he's been there for years. Mark Miller at Constellation Software, Greg Abel. So that gives us the confidence. These guys who have been mentored for decades by the best of the best, hopefully some of the high qualities rubbed off it. I mean, we're not expecting Greg Abel to be the next Warren Buffett, but if he's got 1% of Warren Buffett, that's got to be better than better than nothing.
Right.
So let's talk about smart capital allocation using share buybacks. With the dynamic market, especially the massive pullback in the markets in March, unfortunately, as well as the worry of AI narrative on some companies, no question, some of the technology stocks pulled back so far for the first quarter. Nice rebound, of course, in so far in Q2. But what kind of value creation can companies do when their stock is under pressure?
Well, one thing that we try to own here is companies that generate free cash flow. Mm-hmm. And while this sounds, you know, kind of simple in theory, in practice, there are a lot of businesses that really are not that profitable. Mm-hmm. And so when you have an event like in March or tariffs last year, and your free cash, and you're not generating any free cash flow, all you're really trying to do as a company is stay afloat.
Survive.
But the companies that we're owning, and we've talked about this on prior podcasts, they're actually doing quite well. Like, they're growing revenues, they're generating free cash flow, profits are growing, but then their share prices are down. And so I think one of the themes that we've seen in the earnings that I've reported so far is that the companies are really taking advantage of the dip in the share price to buy back more stock. Mm-hmm. We saw this with Moody's did it, MSCI did it, Netflix announced a big buyback.
Waste Connections
did it. And that's what you want to see, because
Constellation won't do it.
Constellation
for
won't.
A different reason. Probably, maybe it should here, given the stock price, but that's a story for another day.
Right.
Yeah.
And
that's, and Berkshire Hathaway, did we announce that? Yeah. Berkshire has announced a big buyback. So what are you signaling with a buyback? Because some people will say, yeah, they're just doing it to goose the stock price, right? It's as soon as you announce a buyback, the market likes it a little bit, and then what you're trying to do is just boost the earnings per share, right? Because if you earn $1 million and you got nine shares outstanding versus 10 shares outstanding, obviously your earnings per share grows versus you still earn the same amount of money.
Yeah.
But Wall Street and analysts and investors say, hey, the earnings per share is growing fast. It's financial engineering, of course, but there makes lots of sense sometimes to buy back your stock, not beyond goosing your earnings per share.
Yeah. Simply put, like if you as a management, you feel that your shares are undervalued, then buying back your stock with extra free cash flow is going to benefit the shareholders.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what we're seeing with the companies that we own.
Yeah, I mean, you're a part owner at Baskin. If you got scared about the stock market or what have you, and you came to me and said, Barry, will Baskin buy back the stock and I'll take a low price, I probably would do it.
Right.
I would talk to the other owners here and say, hey guys, we're not paying out dividends for the next few months because we're going to be buying back stock.
Yeah.
And that will benefit us all, because over time there'll be fewer shares outstanding. So when our profits grow, there'll be higher dividends for those that continue to keep their shares, and their ownership interest increases. How can you lose with that?
Exactly.
Yeah. So we don't like it when companies buy back stock. Let's talk about when we don't like when companies buy back stock, and when their share prices are overvalued, or when they use maybe debt, or
hard to say, right? Yeah. Because you can only really know whether the shares were overvalued or undervalued in hindsight. I think the situations that you don't want to see are when the company is kind of burning the furniture to make buybacks, right? Or pay dividends, where the company's cutting CapEx, they're laying off employees, like results are not doing well, but then they're putting money into buybacks.
Yeah.
Whether it's to prop up the share price or to allow executives to hit compensation targets or...
Well, any CEO, any CEO, when their fundamentals are unchanged, or if their fundamentals are improving, or they have good confidence in the future, but yet the outside private buyers wants to pay a lower price,
right?
Why not buy back the stock when the market is not reflecting reality or their vision of what's going to happen? And look at Apple over the years buying back its stock. I think it started materially buying back stock in the mid 2010s, right? Whether 2013, 2014, I don't know exactly, but at that time, it was, maybe earning $1 billion in profit. Now it's earning, I don't know, $20 billion in profit or much higher, right? So that was the right move. For some companies, buying back stock, regardless of price, makes sense if the future is going to be better. Obviously, we don't want companies just to buy back stock just because they have the excess cash flow, sit on it. One of the other companies, of course, Copart, a company that we own, not doing well right now, but the management has said, this is the time for us to buy back our stock. We have confidence that things are going to normalize, and let's take advantage of the fact that our stock has fallen tremendously and we have such a beautiful balance sheet. So Ernest says, we'll only find out in hindsight whether these buybacks were smart or not, but we do agree that buying back your stock when your results are good and your share price is depressed is probably a pretty decent capital allocation tool.
Yeah. Yeah, I think really at the end of the day, what you're saving is, like, hypothetically, if these companies paid it out as a dividend instead and you bought back the stock,
yeah.
like, I think what all you really lost is the tax that you would pay on the dividend. Mm-hmm. So kind of it's just a more tax efficient way to return cash to shareholders.
Yeah.
But happy to see it when, yeah, when
that's
it happens.
That's a podcast for another day to yeah. talk about. And but for sure, we've mentioned on many podcasts before why dividends are a good tool for capital allocation, but yeah. not the only tool. And it really comes down to confidence in the future and valuation today and what you're generating and what's you're available to do with that cash flow.
No, but I think the real key is that these companies have extra cash flow because mm-hmm. they are so profitable that
yeah.
they really don't have anything else that they need to do with the mm-hmm. cash. And so being able to increase the ownership of its existing shareholders through a buyback is a smart thing to do.
Yeah.
Whereas for a company like Taiwan Semiconductor, which had excellent earnings 2 weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
and they're not doing a buyback because they're using all of their cash flow to build new fabs.
Yeah.
And that's kind of exactly what you want to see from a company that has growth prospects.
It comes down to return calculation. I can take this dollar and buy back my stock, or I can take this dollar and presumably grow my business, and that dollar will turn into a $1.20
right.
if I do it right. Whereas a buyback, maybe the dollar turns into a $1.03 or a $1.04.
Right. Yeah.
It's meaningful. It certainly has value over the long term, the buybacks, but it's certainly not as attractive as an acquisition or a reinvestment of cash flows into something that generates a lot of cash.
Right.
Okay, so that's enough about buybacks. The final topic, the feature discussion today is about TFI International. This one, of course, gave us and our clients lots of angst and questions over 2025. The stock TFI is a logistics trucking company, less than truckload, regular truckload. Suffice it to say, very cyclical business, came out of the pandemic just over-earning,
yep.
one could say. If we remember during that time, interest rates fell to zero. Everybody was remodeling their house, buying a new TV, buying jet skis, making pools. Not everybody, but you know those that could afford it, buying as much gear as because they were getting free money from the government, the credit card rates were right. lower, and
no one was working. More importantly,
yeah,
so, like there was not enough truck drivers.
Yeah,
so rates had gone up.
Interesting.
There
point.
Was supply chain
yeah.
issues where you couldn't get like shipping containers.
Yes,
do you remember that?
Yes, of course.
So freight rates were very high in 2022, and again with the benefit of hindsight, like they were clearly over-earning at that time.
Yeah, but the stock had done tremendous and more than doubled in a very quick period of time. Everybody was saying that Lane Bedard and the management team are the best capital allocators in Canada.
Right.
You know, part of it was over-earning and that came crashing to a halt. Although it didn't really materialize into lower earnings until 2025.
Right.
Right. And, the supply chain was still messed up. The economy was still pretty good in 23 and 24. But, a huge turnaround in 2025 for the trucking industry. What happened in 2025 that caused TFI's earnings really to plummet?
Well, it was like the freight environment got worse. Yeah. There was still an oversupply of trucks. The freight end markets were weak as well.
Yeah.
So a lot of that was putting more pressure on rates.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the tipping point for TFI was when they had originally set profitability targets for their LTL division, and they had to delay that. They said they weren't going to achieve it. And so investors were wondering, did they end up buying a dog?
Yeah.
Right. And so that's why.
But it wasn't just TFI. It was all
right.
trucking and shipping yeah. companies that had gotten hurt in 2025.
Yeah, TFI
did worse.
Did worse because they bought UPS Freight, mm-hmm. which was a fundamentally just a lower quality asset than some of the other shipping companies that exist, such as Old Dominion Freight Line.
Mm-hmm.
And so also Old Dominion's margins were like, let's say 30%, and they went to, let's say, 25%.
Yeah.
But TFI was barely profitable during that time.
And TFI's plans were a little bit thwarted. They really wanted to create a large LTL business
yep.
to compete against Old Dominion and Saia. market turned.
Yeah.
The company, but the amazing thing is, even throughout the downturn of 2025, the company raised its dividend twice last year, very profitable, generated an enormous amount of free cash flow. So is trucking an amazing, wonderful business, high quality? No, but the management team is of the highest quality. And in a cyclical business like trucking, things can recover very, very fast.
Right.
We're still waiting for the housing market to recover.
Right.
A decade later from the 2008, not 20 years later, right? But the trucking market can turn on a dime.
Yeah.
And so all the elements that were negative in 2025 seem to reverse in course in 2026. Economy's still doing well. And now we have a shortage of truck drivers.
Yeah. And so they reported earnings last night. Mm-hmm. So
that would be... Reporting this, by the way, on April 28th.
Yep. So 27th night. Mm-hmm. The stock is up, I think, 7-8% today.
Yeah.
Because they said things are finally starting to improve. Rates are going up. You're starting to see there's a new driver restrict rules on driver English proficiency for drivers in the US. That's starting to limit supply of drivers. Mm-hmm. And as a result, rates are starting to go up. Mm-hmm. They've continue to make a lot of progress on improving the quality of the service at their LTL division. So like basic things like not missing pickups, not breaking the customer's freight while in transit, mm-hmm. and improving the quality of the freight. So focusing more on small and medium sized businesses.
And this is one where the earnings can really inflect, given that you can, if the shipping rates just go up by a little bit, because you have fixed costs, right? The truckers don't eat the cost of higher oil and gas, right?
Yeah.
Gasoline, they pass it on to the end user. So it's really about supply demand.
Yep. And so I think that's really what's... No, the stock's up. I think one thing we didn't talk about was the stock is already up like 40, 50%.
It's up 40% year to date. It had a nice recovery at the end of 2025.
Yeah.
And so this is, we've said it a billion times. The news doesn't have to improve for the stock market or a stock to get better. You just have to have confidence that the news isn't going to get worse and that there's going to be a light at the end of the tunnel.
Right.
Anybody who was paying attention to the trucking business, it was easy to see that there would be a crackdown on truck drivers. It was easy to see that as the trucking business had a tough couple of years, many competitors would go bankrupt and the strongest ones would survive. And TFI saw this. They signaled to investors, hey, we're buying our stock hand over fist. We're raising our dividend. We're going to live through this and we're going to come out the other side a much better company. And that's where it is. So patience proves out. You got to let management, adapt and respond to the environment. Will we be in a boom? How long will this boom last for? I don't know. We're really satisfied that the stock is, almost doubled from the bottom.
No, and I think, one thing that, obviously, I think the management would rather not have lived through this last couple of years.
I don't want to live through it as an investor either. But
I think in many senses, it really validates the investment thesis that TFI has been telling almost ever since it listed in the U.S. in 2020, which is that even though they're a trucking business and trucking is cyclical, they are a free cash flow machine.
Yeah,
where even if revenues are down and profits are down, because of their ability to manage CapEx, they are still able to generate strong free cash flows throughout that time, mm-hmm. which they use to buy back stock, right?
So talking about buybacks, right? TFI, even though it looked pretty bleak in 2025 and the stock got crushed, the result, it was still immensely profitable.
Yes.
And free cash flow was actually very, very good. Yeah. So why... Making acquisitions in 2025 may be tough to do in that environment. Buy back stock.
Yeah.
And so they bought an enormous amount of stock back in the low $100 to $150 range. And now they're kind of calm, not buying back stock because the stock has recovered.
Right.
That's smart capital allocation.
Yeah. And so I think looking ahead through 27 and 28, who knows what the economy is going to do. But I think they expect that things are going to continue to get better. A lot of the work that they've done to improve the cost structure and the service levels of the business are bearing fruit, and they expect they actually raised their long-term margin outlook for the business.
That's awesome.
And
so they used this tough time to really right the ship in terms of operations.
Right.
When everybody's fat and happy, there's no point
in
firing employees and selling off this asset and looking for underperformance.
Right.
But when times are tough, boy, oh boy, you check your assets over and over.
And I think there's still the potential for them to do a spinoff.
Yeah.
So separate the asset light LTL business with the asset heavy truckload business.
So, and that's been signaled to the investors for a number of years. It hasn't happened. It tried to, also move its home office to the United States. Canadians didn't like that whatsoever. Yeah. So that kind of thwarted that plans, because I assume that they want to have a U.S. listing for this LTL business.
Yes.
So what does the stock do from here? Well, it's had a terrific run. It's recovered. The news is now improving. I think it's now a show me story, in the sense that it has to continue to deliver these good results, and what type of capital allocation it will do. If it's no longer buying back stock, is it now eyeing some acquisitions?
Yep.
Is it eyeing a spinoff of the LTL, maybe merging it with another company? We don't know, but the company is certainly very active, very dynamic. You have management that owns a lot of the stock as well. So everything fits with us. It's an example of a type of company that's idiosyncratic in our portfolio. It's not just, we don't just own tech or growth, quality type names in the U.S. We own a whole bunch of different companies. Everybody talks about the headline names, but a TFI is certainly a very important anchor in our portfolio.
I think it's up almost as much as oil stocks this year.
Sweet. So that's all we have for you, and we'll see you back here real soon. This podcast is for informational purposes only, and any forecasts on the economy, markets, or individual securities should not be viewed as investment advice, a recommendation or an offer or solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Clients of Baskin Wealth Management and the speakers on this podcast may own shares of the companies discussed. Information on this podcast is current as of the time of production and is subject to change. If you have any questions or would like to subscribe to these podcasts, visit our website at baskinwealth.com.